time, we'll go on to item six, discussion and recommendation on boat capacity study for crossing Kingdom Lake and Lake Granbury. Mr. Rendy and Mike Elkis.
The board members, as you recall, on the 10th and 11th of April, we presented on behalf of John Petrie, our boating capacity study consultant, his report, his draft report to you. From that presentation, you had specific questions that we took from that and would like to answer now. Then we intend to go through the recommendations at PK and then the recommendations at Cranberry. There'll be discussion in between each of those for the board. Next slide, please, Jennifer. These are the three areas for the rest of the workshop we'll be covering, specifically with the boating capacity study. Next slide. Next slide. This is what we heard the board members say, at least during the presentation and during the discussion. Does a stopback phase three report conflict with the boating capacity study? And then you really want more detail on blast stack storage. Next slide. Our view is basically that no, we do not feel like that there is a conflict with the phase three report from Staubach and the boating capacity study. Both of them, I think, look at responsible lake development at both lakes and how we want to gear toward doing that. And we feel like that certainly it's dynamic and flexible as circumstances warrant and the board so chooses in future development at each of the lakes. Mike and his staff have done a significant amount of work on dry stack storage, and I'd like to turn this portion briefing over to him to discuss that.
Move it to the proper size. Well, good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you this morning. At our last meeting, there were significant questions about dry stack storage. And so my staff and myself, Ken Knight sitting in the back, had a lot to do with this, put together what we hope is an informative tutorial here, and we'll answer any questions that you might have as we go through. You asked us to show you a little bit more about dry stack storage. All the presentations you've heard this morning, particularly from PK, it occurred to me as I was sitting there listening to this, I'm going to load density ourselves in a really crowded lake here not too long. So it's important to discuss some alternatives as we look forward to the future of lake access for the public. And dry stack storage provides us some of those opportunities. Next slide. What is it? Basically, it's a concept that's not new to anybody. It's been around since the 50s. It is an alternative to wet storage. Instead of storing your boat on the water or slightly above the water, you store it off the water on the shore. It gained some popularity in the 70s. And as you look to the future on lakes around the country, this is coming more into focus because most lakes around the country are facing the same thing that we are, and that is increasing crowded on those particular areas. Next slide. Why do we use it? Well, from the customer's perspective, dry stack offers some opportunities to save wear and tear on the boats. Obviously, if you're storing your boat on the water or even slightly above the water in the weather, you are subjecting the boat to those type of environmental factors. Dry stack affords you the opportunity to put it in a covered facility and take it out when you need it. Security is enhanced for the customer. You no longer have the boat sitting alone unattended on the water. You have it in a what generally turns out to be a locked, secure environment. There's less cost to build it, and the potential for revenue is significant, as you'll see later on in the presentation. The thing that I really want to focus on is the final point there, and that talks about protecting the environment and enhancing the shoreline. What this really allows for is the fact that you can allow lake access, which is critical for developments in the future, without completely occupying the shoreline with boat docks and marinas all the way around the lake. As you are very familiar, we are already have 13 public marinas at Possum Kingdom, and a whole bunch of wet storage, private wet storage over there around the lake. There's only a limited amount of our shoreline that is still preservable, I'll say, and Tri-Stack would help us to do that. Next slide. I thought I'd just walk you through these. This is kind of a no-brainer. This is basically the way that Dry Stack works. First of all, boat owners would call to the marina facility, Dry Stack Marina facility, and they'd turn them up a boat. The marina operator would in turn deliver the boat out of Dry Stack storage. Next slide. The boat's then launched either on a forklift system or a rail system into the lake. It is temporarily parked up against a long pier or a courtesy box. You get in your boat and you drive away and you enjoy the lake. When you're it's time to come off the lake, you return it to the courtesy slips where the marine operator takes care of it and delivers it back into Dry Stack storage. The process to deliver or to retrieve the boat takes somewhere, and this varies depending on the competency of the operator, somewhere between 10 and 20 minutes to get your boat on stack and off stack. Next slide. Some of the questions that have been asked, and y'all have asked when you were up here last time, is What is the comparison between dry stack storage and wet slip storage in terms of use of the lake? Our research has told us that it's essentially the same. They're both marinas, and that means that about at any given point in time on a summer weekend afternoon, you're going to have about 25% of your total capacity on the lake at any given point in time. And whether that's dry stack or whether it's wet slips, it's about the same. The next question you ask us is what size of boats will this handle? Generally speaking, our research has told us anywhere from 16 to 28 foot boats. The boats up to 40 foot can and are routinely housed in dry stack storage. Next slide. Next question you asked is how many courtesy docks are necessary? Our research has determined that courtesy dock requirements generally are in the 5 to 10% of capacity category. However, what is really critical in determining the amount that you need is the operator's ability to deliver boats to the water. If, for example, you can only deliver 10 boats to the lake an hour, then that would tell you that you probably don't need more than about 10 wet slips or in that vicinity. So that ability to deliver is critical when you're determining how many courtesy docks are necessary. Again, this is valet service. This is here's your boat, and enjoy the lake. Next slide. Average monthly rental costs. Now, on this slide, we kind of mixed apples and oranges, so bear with me a little bit, but we wanted to make this slide meaningful to you. In terms of dry stack storage, we looked nationwide, obviously because we didn't have a significant amount of it at Possum Kingdom. Nationwide, in the sampling that we took, and you'll see the areas that we looked at in a later slide, it ran somewhere between $4 and $13 a linear foot nationwide for dry stack storage. Now, wet slips, we went ahead and took an average at Possum Kingdom because obviously we have a lot of wet slip storage up there right now. And the cost right now to rent, we're running somewhere between $4 and $8 a linear foot. It's important to note, however, that most of the wet slip storage is designed in given parameters, and the customer is going to pay for that given parameter whether or not the boat fully occupies that slip. Let me explain. If I've got an 18-foot boat, I'm probably going to end up renting a 24-foot slip. So I'm still going to pay for that 24-foot slip even though I don't have an 18-foot boat to put in it. Again, the difference in the rates nationally really had to do with the amenities that the operator offered. Obviously, the $4 dry stack was significantly less amenities than the $14 dry stack. And I think you'll probably find that to be true with most wet slip storage as well. Next slide. We're going to give you a little bit of an idea about the types of dry stack that's available. And it kind of runs the whole gamut. The picture at the top represents what we call a rack-supported dry stack building, and that's a completely enclosed facility where the load racks are completely housed and they're protecting them from the environment. There's a three-sided rack structure that's similar, except it's open in one room. Freestanding dry stack, which is open to the environment. Roof-covered dry stack protects it from the top. And finally, there's actually a portable dry stack, which is convenient but doesn't provide for the for big protection as well as the other examples. Next slide. What I'm showing you here is the application for jet skis for personal watercraft. Again, these fit this category very nicely because they're small and they're generally they are you know, similar configuration, so it's easy to design for. Next slide. I told you that we'd show you what we benchmarked against. This slide shows a whole lot of dry stack storage that's already located here in Texas. And you can read that as well as I can. Next slide. And then we did benchmark nationally as well. Next slide. I wanted to point out some advantages and disadvantages of wet slip versus dry stack. First of all, it's exposed to weather in wet slip storage. Generally speaking, depending on the configuration, you're protected from those elements with dry stack. Fuel and leakage into the lake is an issue with dry stack and with wet slip, and it always will be. Both from fuel as well as sewage, and those issues are contained much better in terms of dry stack storage. Wet slip generally affects water quality, and dry stack generally protects water quality. Next slide. First bullet here is very important. I think wet slips have a tendency to destroy fish habitat, and let me explain. Every time you put a marina on that water, or even a private dock on that water, and you have to remove anything from that water, be it trees, stumps, or anything else, you're destroying fish habitat. Dry stack allows you to preserve that fish habitat better. Building acreage is reduced with wet slip, and it's enhanced with, or at least it's protected with dry stack, in that you're not occupying very valuable water space with what ends up being inert storage most of the year. Finally, and this is very, very important, particularly as we face the development that is sure to come at Possum Kingdom, is the fact that it protects the shoreline for everybody for years to come. 30 years from now, you're hopefully going to be able to see some shoreline at Possum Kingdom. But if we're to ensure that, we're going to have to take action now. Next slide. This slide, I think, is important. Joe Morgan, the Director of Compliance from FERC, had these thoughts about dry stack storage, particularly as they relate to lakes nationwide, as overcrowding and continued demand on those waterways increases. And I think that's a very important point. Next slide. And that's pretty much what I have, and I'll take any questions that you might have concerning dry stack storage. Yes, sir.
Regarding your survey of which was your page 9, the dry stack boat storage we used with the soil. What about the ownership that you find, and like the length of Lake Travis, are they co-owned with SCRA, or they totally private? What is the fee arrangement on those? How does this particular case, SCRA, manage and operate and benefit from these stations.
SRA acts very similar to the way the Brazos River Authority does in its permitting responsibilities for structures that are on the water. In terms of dry stack storage, and I will opt to Ken Hyde, who actually interviewed these folks for us, but generally speaking, they're on deeded property.
Is that correct, Ken?
Is there a license agreement? Is there a fee agreement? I thought you know the economics of these things.
I don't have that information for you right now, but I'll certainly get that.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're talking about a license for the actual dry stack storage, not for the boat ramp going into
the water. My question is, does the LCRA, for this particular example, have to have any ownership of these things, fee license, or concessions, whatever?
I understand.
It's like the economic part of these things.
Okay.
Besides the environment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Make the assumption that the dry stack storage is on deeded land, and there's no connection with the LCRA whatsoever. The courtesy docks and the other areas are in the water.
Correct.
And I think, you know, we need to know the relationship between those.
Right. And what I can tell you that we would anticipate is certainly the fees associated with the courtesy docks, but also that boat ramp now becomes a more valuable commodity as well.
Let me tack something on. I don't know if this is the time or place to do it, but in Mr. Tietry's initial report, one of the recommendations is to do away with on-water facilities. And my comment and my concern, and I don't think we're there yet, is that his recommendation is to move the parking lot, to move it off the water onto dry land. But what I want to know is, not only are we moving that parking lot, but where are we limiting that parking lot? Because I've heard about 3,000 lots are fixing to come available on the lake at 25%. That's 750 additional boats that are going to hit the lake. Users at one time. And that's a huge impact.
Well, let me say two things about that. First of all, the boat rating study does not talk about moving anything off the water that we presently have on water. I just want to be real clear about that.
Let me clarify. It recommends dry stack storage.
Mm-hmm.
Dry stack storage as opposed to a wet facility.
Yes, sir.
So you're talking about moving the parking lot. You're moving it off of the lake and you're moving it on the land.
That's right.
And part of what Billy's comment was is that when you have the ability to permit or allow certain on-water courtesy docks, that needs to correspond to a limited number of dry stack storage, and that we need to have some kind of plan for that, for these developments and for the rest of the lake.
That's correct. And let me address that. Dry stack or wet storage, it doesn't subjugate our responsibilities to be good stewards of that water. And to that extent, we still control access to that water. And that's important as we're discussing and entering discussions with developers. Assuming or if the boat building study is approved, we have a baseline now about what the crowding on any particular part of that lake is. And now we can take that data, as we talked about the developer who says, well, I want to put 1,000 dry stack in, and we look at the impact that 1,000 dry stack will have on that particular section of the lake. And we can really make a statement that says, no, if you want to access the water vis-a-vis our property or a boat ramp, we think the maximum capacity that your dry stack is going to be will be X, whatever that number might be after staff studied it. So we have absolute, even though it's on duty property, we have that lever, I guess. If a particular section of the lake can only absorb 25 more boats, then we can characterize that to any prospective developer and limit them to that amount if he wants to access the water.
But the assumption that I hear being made is that when a development goes in, it impacts the water directly around that development. And to some extent, that's true. But the other thing is the boaters are going to take the path of least resistance, and they're going to find calm water. So where you may boat in, you may live in one area, you may be moving across the lake to another area that's not impacted and right now looks fine. So it's, I'm trying to look at the whole picture and not sections of the lake, because in my mind, and maybe I'm incorrect, when you put a boat on the lake, it doesn't matter where that boat is on the lake, it affects all boats on that lake.
Absolutely. Get money for this presentation. We researched this through a particular consultant who was the chairman and CEO of Uponac, which is one of the largest developers of dry stack in the country. He no longer works for them, but he's in the consulting business. And we put that question to him, and his answer was 5 to 10%. But the caveat was the key part is how many can we deliver to the water. That's really going to drive the number of courtesy docks. And if you notice in the pictures here, we showed you a lot of pictures of dry stack, and you'll notice that they're not inundated with courtesy docks. Yes, ma'am.
How does this arrangement work with the courtesy dock, say, for someone that does need to get off the water for an hour or two when they leave their boat? Is this sufficient?
Well, certainly, that's going to be... I'm sorry.
I just wondered if that courtesy dock was sufficient to just leave their boat for an hour or so without having to put it in dry stack.
That's certainly going to be an operator decision. What we're going to be concerned with, obviously, is long-term that's of storage. If the operator has no problem with them helping with building along the pier or in a courtesy dock, that's the operator's discretion within his, the capacity that he has to accept that.
The one dry dock that I was familiar with was on Lake Travis, and you had the dry dock facility and the courtesy dock associated with that dry dock. Almost immediately in the same vicinity was a separate concession, which was a little shopping area and a restaurant on the lake. And they had their own courtesy docks. And for the people that were going in and out of the dry dock, they used the dry dock courtesy. Those that wanted to get out for an hour to eat or whatever used the restaurant facilities. So it was, in that case, it was actually two separate courtesy docks right there to serve two different commercial facilities.
And you'll find that at Possum Kingdom as well. There's several restaurants on the water right now that offer courtesy docks to people that are coming in to use their facilities.
Well, and something that I don't know, you're saying 5 to 10% courtesy docks, and yet I've got a letter here from another expert that says 40 to 50%. And my concern is that if we don't get that number right, you're going to have people middle of the day and coming in at the evening, and we're going to have a bunch of boats tied up that are going to end up being our problem. And then we're going to end up policing a marina / dry stack storage facility who can't keep up. So, I'm a little concerned that 5 to 10% is a low number.
I understand.
And I'd rather err on the side of caution on that as opposed to trying to be aggressive and to limit the number of slips, because I think the other problem is going to be greater than...
Understand.
Okay.
And you were discussing water quality issues associated with marinas versus dry stack. Have you had any water quality problems at Possum Kingdom associated with any of the marinas there?
We're not testing routinely right now. When we have a problem area that we discover, we generally test. For instance, if we know there's an area that's failed, we'll test there. We have from time to time testing around the various marinas, but they're not showing at this point in time. And Tiffany, I'll have to you. This is your question, really.
In our conventional routine water testing, we're not in the marinas. There has been some historical monitoring of the marinas by the lake rangers that has indicated there are some issues specifically mainly with bacterial issues, and it's usually the marinas that can handle the larger boats that have the onboard wastewater facilities. We have not done a full sweep of the marinas for things like volatile organic compounds and the hydrocarbon contamination. That might be something that could be looked into if that's something the board wants to pursue. But I'm not aware of anything more advanced like that that we have monitored.
I was just curious if you've had any major violations or anything of that in the past that I've never really heard of.
Not that I'm aware of as far as a major water quality violation that would like have us listed as an impaired water body.
And you've started the clean marina programs, correct? Have all the marinas participating?
No. That was a voluntary program. Initially, we had, I believe it was 8 marinas that signed up, but only 6 have actually made it all the way through the process. The remaining 2, I would suspect, once they realized how many repairs they have to do to their marinas, have backed out of the program because they don't have the financial, I guess, wherewithal to improve their marinas. So we have 6 right now on the lake that are in the Clean Marinas program. Those do, should hopefully, the improvements they made should help protect water quality long-term, provided they stay with the program and maintain their improvements.
And would you say that if they are in the Clean Marina program, that that should assure a lot more, the clean water problems, you know, should be alleviated?
There is still a large question, I would think, as far as strictly the marina operator goes, yes, but it's still a large issue on individual boat owners, how conscientious they are with maintaining their boats. Fixing and repairing leaks promptly and quickly as soon as they're discovered, things like that. There's still a lot of human variable there as far as the individual slip renters and how they maintain their boats that could lead to problems on the lake.
But that not still be a problem with boats that are in dry stack because you're dealing with the same person with the same type of boat.
Well, in dry stack, it would be a little more obvious to see if you have a leak. When it goes into the water and disperses, it's a lot harder to track back to the individual boat that's problematic. Also, I believe I'll have to double check, but I think most dry stack storage facilities will be required to have a stormwater control permit from TCEQ. That's not a difficult permit to obtain, but it would protect the lake more. If they would have to control runoff from their facility and not allow things like the leaking gas shouldn't leave their facility and ever enter the lake if they're following the permit adequately.
I have a question. I think it was about a year ago, January or so, that you all came to us, the board asked for a colonial permission, complying with some state law or another, regarding inspecting the on-water facilities that had sanitation facilities. And you all would inspect boats of a particular size and marinas and docks. Has it been done?
We had worked. We had to get designation for that authority from the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. We got a partial designation where we can inspect their sewage pump-out facilities and marinas. All the marinas have been inspected and are in the process of being inspected again. It's an annual requirement. TCEQ did not grant us permission to perform those inspections on individual boats, just at the marina pump-out facility.
You all told us that the deadline, I believe last year, was June 30th or July the 1st or something. There was some emergency release. We have not heard anything back regarding that. And if it's not been done, what are our responsibilities regarding the state law that you all brought to us in the first place?
I'm not remembering what the state law was.
And you're talking about the water sticker program.
And you all called it?
Correct. And what we have done is we've done diligence, like Tiffany said, to the extent that we have the authority to do it. We're still waiting for authority to be able to do those for individual boats. Yes, it is a very critical thing because we don't want to see black water get discharged into our lakes. But by the same token, the program is a TCEQ program, and our hands are tied to a certain extent to their authority to allow us to do it.
Well, the reason why we should be concerned about on-water storage, if we don't have the authority to actually comply and inspect and enforce, then we have to be cautious about more boats being stored in the water that are uninspected and not stickered.
Yes, sir.
What's the delay with not being able to inspect the individual boats?
That is strictly a TCEQ decision, and I think right now it's their program as far as they see it. And I really think there is a just some, if not a high priority issue for them. So getting us that designation through their upper levels is a major priority.
Well, we've done that, correct.
We've contacted them many times and talked to them. We can try to take it up a level if we want to. I've been with staff level folks, and it's just there's some turmoil within TCEQ and that the division that frankly runs that, and I just don't think it's gotten there yet.
And it's just other ways can do that. They just haven't created BRA permission to do it.
Right. There are some other lakes that have received permission to do that. Lake of the Pines is one. I'm not sure if LCRA has that permission yet. It's just working through their process to get to that. Currently, right now, to get those stickers, individual boat owners have to go to TCEQ, but quite frankly, they aren't generally inspected.
I have one question, Mike. On the courtesy docks, if the dry docks are on private land and is there some system or would there be a system where they have to contract with the BRA to have a courtesy dock?
Yes.
So that they don't overload the public ramps?
Yes.
What would restrict them? You'd have to have some way of monitoring, I guess, that they don't go from a dry dock onto a public ramp. Otherwise, you'd be overloaded.
That's correct. Generally speaking, with a dry stack storage, we will authorize them a ramp for their use. In terms of controlling their ability to say, well, I'm going to take my boat out of dry stack storage and boat and use the public boat ramp, it's more difficult. It's problematic for us because we're not, at this point in time, attempting to monitor the number of boats that enter the water from our public boat ramps. But certainly, as far as any on-water facility, be it courtesy dock or a ramp into the lake, we have absolute permitting authority over that, and that's mandated by our FERC license.
You know, that's why I think it's so important that we know how many courtesy docks are really needed so that we can back into the formula and come up with a limitation on dry stack storage. Otherwise, we're going to have private investors on private land that could put up 2,000 unit dry stack storage and it would be detrimental to the lake. So,
and you could even have somebody that doesn't have a development but just puts in one of those little dry stack things, you know, away so it's close to one of the public boat ramps, and they could put 1,000 of those in, and there's no control over that at all. You can just come put your boat in the public boat ramp.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to ever be able to control all of it. You know, those little boat sheds that are popping up all around the lake. I mean, I just think that's going to be a consistent growing need, especially if what I hear is we're about to put 3,000 lots on the lake, and from the marina's numbers that I've heard today, it doesn't come near the 3,000. So people buy a place at the lake, they're going to want a boat, they're going to have to put it someplace. So whether it's, you know, whether it's dry stack storage or whether it's, you know, a boat shed somewhere, I mean, those numbers are going to impact the lake. And I guess that's been a little bit of my concern with the boat loading study is that it made a recommendation, but it didn't give us a good detailed analysis of the impact of that recommendation. So I think it fell short a little bit there. You know, it's like a rancher knows how many cows he can put on 10 acres. Well, we need to know how many boats we can put on the lake at some point without, you know, stabbing ourselves in the heart.
In our river oversight and guardians of the lake, I think it's quite important that we follow up on things like the clean water program or the sticker on the boat when you have that boat. It's quite important that we as guardians of that lake be informed as to when we have not complied totally with something dictated by the legislature or whatever it is, DCEQ, because in the end, we are responsible for that. I really would like to have a report from you all regarding the proposal you made to us, I think about a year ago, January, where we are, what we couldn't do, and what we need to help you to get this done. We must comply with that before we can move on thinking about putting more boats in the water. The reason caused why we should not have any more boats on the water.
There was no direct mandate to us from TCEQ to enforce the Clean Water Sticker Program. we thought that would be a good proactive way we could help protect our water, so we went to TCEQ to ask for that permission. We got partial, the impetus and the legislative mandate to enforce that regulation still remains with TCEQ. So we are not in danger of violating something that we've been legislative mandated to do. We thought that would be a good program. Other lakes did it. We thought it would be something good we could implement. So as far as appear being under a violation of a legislative mandate, we are not.
I would like to have a report from you all on that, please, beginning with the concept that you brought to us and the compliance or full compliance or non-compliance about that.
There's another issue here, really. I hesitate to bring it up, but you talked about we need to know the ratio of wet to dry. The number you need to know is how many boats can be on the lake. It doesn't make any difference if you got 750,000 boats in dry stack over here. Once you reach that number and say no more on the lake, end of question.
Well, and
there are lakes that operate like that.
Yeah, and that goes back to the fact that if 25% of the boats in a marina are out on the lake on a weekend, once you've got 100 slips, that's 25 boats. But if you've got 1,000 dry stack, does that mean it's 250 boats? And I mean, that has significant impact on us.
Also, the boat and dry stock, unless it's taken care of, there's additional amenities and stuff. You take a boat out of dry storage and put it in the water. How do you know it's battery, fuel, everything else? Unless a boat is the worst thing to have because the maintenance on everything is always. You take it to lake and there's always going to be something wrong with the boat. But now you're on a boat for 30 years. And when I think the boat's filthy and take the lake, there's always something wrong with the boat, Because when you take a boat down to dry storage that's been there for 6 months and put it right in the water,
mm-hmm.
The guy's not going to jump in and drive off.
Well, and that's one of the facilities that the dry stack that I'm familiar with, they offer is battery charging. When they put it in the water, they gas it up and they make sure that it's running.
Okay.
And I have been familiar with that because...
That's more than 5 to 10% of the number of Kersey storage time.
Well, I agree. I hear what Mike and Ken are saying in regards to 5 to 10%, but I'm concerned that number is way too low. Because... I'm not real familiar with multiple areas, but the dry stack that I'm familiar with are more day-type use where people use the water and they live someplace else.
Right.
I mean, my concern is that if they go to PK for a weekend and they've got a house up there, and, and I'll just tell you, in my situation, I've got two young kids. Well, we cannot spend all day out on the lake. I mean, my children take naps and... they need a break, and so we're in and out of the marina a couple times a day, if not a couple times a weekend, and so that's going to impact the number of courtesy docks. I don't know if you can say, once you're on the lake, you only get off once. That's just a concern, so... If we're comparing apples to apples, are we comparing lakes that have dry stack storage that are resort-type facilities where people live, or are we comparing dry stack storage where people have day-type use? Because those two are very different and will impact us very differently. And, I would tend to believe Mike's numbers are 5 to 10% if it was a day-type use. But because of the weekend, and people want to spend overnight, you can't call... and have your boat put in Friday afternoon, taken out Friday night, put in Saturday morning, taken out Saturday night, put in Sunday morning.
That's actually the concept.
Well, I understand that's the concept.
And
reality is my concern, because if marina operators, dry stack storage facility operators, have the best of intentions, but when you come to us crazy boaters that says, oh my God, I need some aspirin, or my kid's got this, or my kid's got that, and I'm going to run in, and running in goes from 10 minutes to 15 minutes to an hour, an hour and a half, and then you've got a marina operator that's got a boat sitting, a dry stack storage boat sitting in a courtesy dock that shouldn't be there, I mean, what are the ramifications? Well, the ramifications come from the fact that the more people that come in and the more boats that you have sitting there, I come in for the end of the day, I don't want to sit in line for my boat to be taken out. I want to pull up to the dock, I want to tie it up, hand the guy the key and say, thank you, I'll call you next week. But then you've got all these people coming off the lake at the same time, and we've got all these boats, well, then that becomes a problem for the BRA.
It's a logistics issue. I agree with you with the for the operator, and the operator is going to do what his market is driving him to do. If there's a demand for the type of on-off access that you just mentioned, the operator will provide that.
There lies a question, Mike, that we need to answer for the operator, and that's someplace here. We have to establish some parameters as to what the operator can reasonably expect. And we need to determine as where you're spending out, whether it's 5, 10%, or 50%, whatever the percentage figure is, because I listen to all these developers there. Their deal of marketing is that we can get a boat on Great and Possum Kingdom and you buy a lot from me. That's the whole thing. They need to know. It's fair to them, but they need to know that they can actually deliver and what they're selling. And the key to that is the answer lies here as to what they're doing with the sell and deliver regarding the access to the lake and the numbers of boats, different types of storage. And I think it's in fairness to some of these folks that have very short deadlines that we arrive at some scientific answer to this matter. Because there's no resolution in all the things that I've read so far about what we can tell a developer to do. This is what we expect from us.
It is a major issue of discussion as we go on in our in-depth discussions with the developers. Water access is the thing.
Absolutely.
Ready? How many boats? I'm going to one extreme on the left. How many boats could this lake handle at one time? Let's say all our flowing water. How many would we allow to be out there?
Well, number one, we don't restrict the number right now. We don't restrict the number of boats that can be on there.
Theoretical question. How many boats do we think that could safely operate out in that lake?
John Petrie is our per se as consultant.
I can make that yet. Sure. But we should be able to, we should conceptually think about that. And then there we go, well, how many dry docks are
there? Well, film this, because you tell them that's all you can have.
I'd like to answer that question.
Go ahead.
I've been before you twice. The first time I shared with you the methods of the study, and the second time the findings. And so I'm here today to answer any questions. As far as how many boats any lake can handle, it's a bit complicated. First of all, boats vary in size from personal watercraft to houseboats. Okay. Secondly, there are locations in the lake where they congregate and cause more problems than other locations. When I did a study like this for Lake Travis, I flew the whole lake during a peak period, and I had people at boat ramps and at marinas, and we did a calculation, and that lake had 1,475 boats on it at one time. Okay, that was considered a threshold for that lake. So it's hard to say, a lake can handle exactly this number. It's where those problems are occurring. If you look at the accident data, we see, again, concentrations of accidents at certain parts of the lake. Okay, so what I'm trying to do with my data is to portray a lake that has places that are can accommodate more boats and other places that can't. In reference to your question, I think one of the chairs in this session, about what this study does. The study was intended to provide a baseline study for which to evaluate future developments. Okay, we don't know what some of those are right now. Should development proposals come in for dry stack storage at certain parts of the lake, we would look at the maps that you've seen because they portray existing building conditions and then evaluate whether that location is good or not. Most boats tend to move about 20 minutes from where they put in the water, okay? And some go much further, but they do congregate in and around where they left. And they do come back at certain times, peak periods, for example. So that does concentrate use at locations where any kind of marina or dry or wet snack storage would be located.
Do you have a factor of what, how many surface acres per boat for a safe operation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see the report. I'll go through that from everywhere.
What is it?
It's about 9 acres per boat is when it's considered a threshold.
9 acres per boat, and we have how many surface acres? Somebody do the math for me.
It's not like filming a movie theater. It's not the same as just sitting down in a room.
I don't mean to be argumentative, sure. And I understand it's not like filming in a movie theater, but people that get on the lake are going to go to where they can find some peace. And if you have to drive a little farther to find the peace, the people will do that, and their habits will change as the lake becomes more crowded. And I think that's our concern. And I hear you when you say we need to be careful and we only need to put, you know, you could put development here, you couldn't put development here. And so I'm gonna pick on you a little bit longer. One of the issues that you mentioned, and one of the things in your book, and this goes back to the Gibson's concern, is that Neely Slough is too crowded for future development.
Well, that's not entirely true.
In the book, it says you recommend no future development.
For different reasons, so. One of the things that in lakes we try to preserve is diversity of experiences. We equate quality experiences with providing choices for people. Under map scenario A, which is baseline for both lakes, we see that management compartment 4 of Neely Slough has a low density, low conflict. So in fact, we want to preserve that kind of experience.
Okay, but when you say low density, low conflict, and what some of my fellow directors may not understand is that there's a buoy at the entrance to that slough that says no wake. So this is not a part of the lake that you can sea do and ski and tube in. It's a part of the lake that has been designated as a no-wake zone, meaning you're either coming and going to your boat slip, or you're going to go in and tie around that cliff and swim. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. And part of the objectives of any lake is to protect those kinds of low-density experiences in coves. Okay, but we're not making any more coves. They're already quite limited. And my experience with other lakes around the country is those become scarce and very valuable. Okay, so map scenario B, again, I wasn't asked to respond to any development for Neely Slough or anything in the study. My job is to provide a baseline for the whole lake. I felt that map scenario B best portrays the lake and includes July 3rd data. If you want to look specifically at Neely Slough, measuring power 4, it is restricted under both scenarios. In fact, under map A, it would preserve that area as a low density, low use area as it exists. Understand that point? Okay, so that provides choices for people. I mean, I go to, I take my two boys and my girl baby, and we like to find a place where they can, you know, park a boat and get away from it and have that kind of experience. Those experiences are becoming more scarce as lakes receive more boating pressure.
And I hear you, but there's already marina in there. So if you go and tie up, you're tying up in an area where people are coming going to a marina, so you talk about a nice, quiet area. I mean, a nice quiet area next to a marina. So, to me, when you talk about dry stack storage or wet slip or whatever, I personally feel, and I'm one director, I personally feel that we need to accommodate the Gibsons in some form or fashion. If what they presented today is true, in 1997 they made a presentation and they were asked to wait, and it's now 2006 and they're still waiting. So, when it comes down to good business and good faith, I think we need to work with them. So, as I look at your boat loading study, and I look at some of the things that's going on, there's a green area in front of the Gaines Bend Peninsula. that we've said we could possibly have some dry stack storage access in that area. The problem I have with that is that's the main body of the lake. And whenever you do dry stack storage, you're going to have a limited number of courtesy slips. And with courtesy slips, you're going to have some kind of wave break for that. So now we're talking about putting a wave break courtesy slip facility in the main body of the lake versus Neely Slough that is already a no-wake zone, already has a marina facility in it. So I'm trying to judge the science versus the common sense. And personally, my problem looking at it is common sense tells me that whatever facility we approve, whether it's, you know, a 500-slip marina or a 5-slip dry stack, we need to approach it from the Neely Slough side to avoid a conflict on the main body of the lake. And the second thing is, there are a bunch of, when I was in there, there are little personal buoys that people can tie up to.
Mooring buoys.
Mooring buoys. There are, I don't know, 4, 5, or 6 mooring buoys along that cliff across from. So you've got 4, 5, or 6 people that are affecting the ability, I think, to put in the dry stack access in a very reasonable place. And the only reason why I'm trying to bring this up, and I'm really trying to bring this up for my fellow directors, is to understand more about what it looks like from being on the water and from being there. Because I know it's hard for, before I went and looked at it, it was hard for me to understand.
Thank you. Your dry stack storage is going to be limited by time. And that's probably the most limiting factor. How many boats can you put into the water in a period of hours when the demand is high? So that's going to be a limiting factor. So there's so that's partly market-driven.
Right, but when we allow them or we permit them, the courtesy docks, we need to have enough forethought to say, well, if you're going to have 20 courtesy docks, then you're limited to, if it's 10%, 200 slip dry stack storage.
Yes, I understand that, but in figuring that, you also need to figure time.
Right, and that's, you know, that's the number that we don't have here today.
I've got a question, and I want to paraphrase one of the gentlemen earlier who was talking about a proposed development at the north end.
Mm-hmm.
One of the statements that he'd said was, providing access to the water in the north part of the lake could possibly relieve some of the crowding in other parts. Just as to that statement, nothing else. Is that a true or false statement?
I agree with that statement. I think if you look at the lake, and we did this hypothetical where we increased use by 20% through 100%, we see that the lower part of the lake turns into more red areas. The upper part of the lake remains green, showing lower densities over time.
Okay, now stay with that, and I want to stay up very narrow on it, because I've got a question. Director Martin brought up a good point a while ago. If you have these mobile dry stack facilities, what's to prevent people from going then to public access ramps and going around this seemingly we're trying to spread out this problem, going back, we still have a concentration issue, right?
Generally speaking, if you're storing in a dry stack facility, the operator's going to deliver your boat to his ramp. So, generally, you're going to use that access to the water. The other thing that I would take a little bit of exception to, will it change the boating habits of the lake? I would tell you that the south end of the lake is popular, was popular, and always will be popular because it's deep water access and it's where people go on that lake. The farther north you go, you get in and you go south. For a couple of reasons. Number one, the water depth up on the north end of the lake is not as deep as it is on the south end of the lake, so you run into stump issues and other obstacle issues. Number two is we have a siltation issue on the north end of the lake, and as the lake continues to silt in, that water depth continues to shrink. So if you put in at the north, you're most likely going to head towards Broadway, towards the middle part of the lake anyway.
Well, and if you've got a marina at the north end of the lake without the development, I can see how it's going to pull people to the north end of the lake. But when you put a development there that's going to actually use the marina, all I see is increasing the numbers.
I think that's the unique. There are families you brought up, Kings Bend. I look at it this way. Richard Garcia brought it up, and so did you. At some point in time, we have to talk to, like, the maximum carrying effectiveness of this lake, without the number of votes. But to then calculate out what we got there already, more important, these folks that are developers that have gotten in line for over the years, almost like subtracting from the inventory, how many new boats, whatever, dry or wet storage, can we effectively authorize so that they know that they may never get authority for some, based on this calculation. It has to be a scientific calculation. It can no longer be I counted them last Friday myself type of thing. We need to know what the maximum carrying capacity is and establish that firmly and then start subtracting from there. So we need to get that done quickly.
I just would like to add that if I could, please. 4 years ago, this lake was all yellow, low density, low conflict. According to the hypothetical projection I'm showing, it's increasingly more red. Someday it may be like Lewisville, it may be all red. At some point, you'll have to make some hard decisions on limits to boats and limits to expansion. And we're feeling those kinds of decisions right now. So it clearly, as I said before, the previous presentation, you're at a juncture, at a crossroads, and those are hard decisions, but we're not making any more places like this in the lake. Those are scarce, and they are agonizing decisions, but they simply have to be made.
In regards to not necessarily dry stacks associated with developments, but like the sheds, you know, down at Brad and all around Grace areas, could we control or help control the number of boats that come in by making a boat ramp via the public use ramps? I mean, I know that's other lakes. I would think that would have been a recommendation here to help control the numbers of boats that go into the lake. You would deter some people.
Well, as you know, right now we have a pilot program on the water that requires fees to be paid now to access the water. And we'll have to wait and see what and if that does anything to our access from our public ramps. We don't know the data from that yet. The only other thing I'd like to add, and just to go along with what you said, Nemo Slough, nearby has got the Clinton Marina there, but if you travel up Nemo Slough, it's a great fish habitat, and there are some really nice included areas. Following up Nemo Slough, it is a nice area to boat in.
But when you talk about conflict on the lake, your conflict is severely diminished when you're in a no-wake speed.
Correct.
So it's not like we're taking an area that currently is utilized for faster boating or some watercraft. This is an area that is used for, they're either fishing, they're tied up to the mooring buoys and they're swimming, or they're coming and going. So, and all three of those activities are at a snail's pace. So from a conflict standpoint, I don't see, it's not like we're going to have a bunch of people running into each other because they're going too fast. So that was my point. I mean,
there are two issues here. The point is that area is experiencing conflicts and high density and third. The recommendation would be to preserve it under low density, low conflict conditions. We're trying to have or maintain more yellow areas, okay? So currently that's what it is under the map A scenario, and my recommendation is to maintain that kind of opportunity in that area.
I just don't agree with that recommendation from what I've seen. So,
Richard Morris,
go ahead. I relate this particularly dry storage to crucial setting in my pick of business and chicken pens. I cannot have enough chicken pens in my stores so nobody never has to wait a few seconds. You cannot, unless you have one scratch left for everyone, can you guarantee somebody will not wait. They're going to have to wait. He says 10% on a survey, then we go with the best knowledge we have. it just can't economically be feasible to put it up in there to guarantee nobody has to wait. And the county, you know, this is the peak time. Then the people begin to realize, I got to go a little earlier or I got to go a little later to get in. It's just common sense. You cannot take care of everybody at the time they want to be taken care of.
I think that's what Dr. Kilgore was trying to state a while ago. You know, the public, the market, the people out there are the ones who are really going to make a lot of decisions.
So we want to give them the best service. We'll get the
You go to the lake. You go to the lake. It's a recreational type thing. They're going to make those choices. This board's not going to make choices for them.
And you go to the gas station on Saturday afternoon. You're sitting there waiting. But are we talking about our putting the limits on? Is that what we're talking about? If I want to build a storage place out there, you're going to tell me I can only have 10% courtesy docks, right?
That's correct. We have absolute control over the number and character of on-water facilities.
As the operator of that place, if I can get the facilities to allow more boats to come in and out faster, I might get more customers. Now, to me, the 10% is a little low. I mean, I'm not an expert in it, but if you were, I don't understand why we would limit them to 10%. I'd say we're increasing it and let the operator suggest how many courtesy docks he thinks he needs to successfully operate his operation there.
Well, the limitation again would come on the footprint on the water of the courtesy dock.
Which brings me to another question. Let me ask another question. Who would be authorized to have these storage places? Just the developer that's developing something here, could I go in just a business person say I want to put in a storage place?
We listen to any and all proposals, yes sir.
Right. So then when you get down to control of congestion, maybe we ought to decide.
Yes, sir.
Where these places should be placed.
Yes, sir, exactly.
Well,
it's
just like building highways and so forth.
I don't know if this is appropriate this time, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I've got a concern as Mike and I approach with the developers, future developers, on behalf of the board and how we look at this study. I mean, we saw this going in at loading capacity as your need for a benchmark on the lake of where we are. And the study, as it is, and how John does this, the consultant, establishes these areas based on what he saw out there in the management compartments and the color coding there is and the recommendations within that. What I'm concerned about is we're talking about Neely School specifically. If we make a decision on Neely School in this area, that whether it's this map, if it's yellow, or the other map where it's red, that allows on-water development in that area. Mike's and my need, as much as anything, and I think for you folks, as we talk to them, is to be able to look at an area that may want to be developed. Let's just pick 20. And there's a development somewhere in that area that wants to go in with additional dry stack, marina, whatever it might be. I think what we need to do is look at that particular segment on the lake from this study, because that's all we have right now. And we do what John did, I think, for you, and add in voting numbers, 10, 20, 30, 50% on up to where that amount of additional boats in that area, turn that to a different color. Because once that happens, it then tells us that you don't want any more development at that point, number one. And it allows us, I think if we can work with John's formula, if they take that, it drills back, I think, right to hear where you're saying, we can look at that big segment and say, hey, it looks like 40 more boats in there takes it from green, puts it to another area where that caps it out. So So if we looked at 40 boats and we took the 25% formula that we talked about at any one time would be on the water, then we're talking about 160 max in a dry stack storage. And then we've got to determine whether it's 10% or 15% that could allow with you development to take place in that area. And that would see what the courtesy dock requirement would be based on 160. If I'm saying this right, and I'm really concerned, at least myself from a management standpoint, that if we start doing something different or selected in an area, if you intend for us anyway as a staff to work with the developers, if in fact you go along and you agree with what he has done as far as the management department, that we're not
going to
know where to go.
Okay, well, let me quantify a couple things. First off, I mean, for whatever reason, Gaines Bend is the oldest development, and why they didn't put a marina in years ago, I don't know, but they definitely have homes, lots on the ground now that need access. Versus developers that don't have any infrastructure in, so I tend to be a little lenient and say they've been patient with us. They've worked with us for going on 9 years, and we need to work with them. Now, whether we put it in the ESLU or put it out on the end of their property out in the main body of the lake, I guess that's yet to be decided. But here's the one thing that we haven't even talked about today is, are we going to tell them they can't have slips that provide for the big cruisers that are on the lake?
I would say, in particular, if we're talking about 40 feet, that those type cruisers, if the one on the lake would have to be other right now current wet storage marinas that have capability.
So we're only going to provide courtesy docks?
That would be the intent.
Okay, so basically there will be no more room on the lake for the big cruisers, except what's already existing.
Either what's existing or what may be in current marina space that's available.
Okay.
And, you know, for me, the whole intent of this thing is to try to take whatever vision the board wants to do forward with the study, realizing it's a snapshot in time, and probably 5 years from now, we'll need to do another one for another day. You heard it. I mean, we're dealing with developers. There's some interest to do it, and we're just trying to see where the board wants to go with the study, what we've got here, and try to determine something.
I think at this point right now, most of the board like to go have lunch. Let's break. Thank you, Mr. Randy.
Well, sir, 30 minutes.
Yeah, we'll try to do it in 30 or 35 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Randy?
Yes, sir.
You want to ask him a couple of items, and you can ask his staff to bring us back some.
From the conversation, and if any of the other directors want to add some input, that's fine. What I'd like to see is two recommendations come back to us from the staff. One is, what is your definitive on the percentage of courtesy docks per dry stack storage? In other words, is it 10%? I just spoke with Mr. Teacher, I'm not sure if he's in here, and he felt like that was probably a little low. Some of the directors, I think, feel that that's a little low. So I'd like a recommendation from the staff that says, this is what we are comfortable living with. And the second thing is, I'd like a recommendation from the staff on the Gaines Bend Marina. How big, where, because I think they've been patient, and I'd like to see some type of fruition come to their quest. So can you do those two things?
But be prepared that if it doesn't come back with the answer that you're looking for, then there's going to be a debate again.
Sure. That's a vote.
Martha?
Well, I'll just write on your first request. It would be nice, but all the dry stacks are not all the same, so really, you need to take them kind of on an individual basis. Because, like, there's with the long travel distance, you need to have more courtesy docks as opposed to somebody that's out there that can do it in and out real quick. Maybe they need fewer courtesy docks. So shouldn't you really kind of look at it per basis and say you get one of the recommended or established people that do this, do an architectural design, make a recommendation on how many courtesy slips you need based on the assets of each development? I mean, rather than saying, okay, we're going to do 20% and say you have to do it 1.5 miles drive from your facility to the water, and then the other one is just right there. It takes them, you know, 2 minutes.
Mr. Ford, in no way is this disrespectful. Anyway, this is what we're trying to do. And that was to say, put that slide back up there with the map of the PK and those color codes. If we go back and review the bidding, and if you go back and you look at the people who sat here for the last 50 years, what has happened, or what did happen, is that it was controlled by some folks. They brought everything. If they didn't agree with what the staff said, they brought it to the board. All we were trying to do was to come forward, whenever we ever get it up there, but to come forward and say, red is this, yellow is this, whatever, yes. And you got to give the guy who's out there on the point of the spear, you got to give him a little break. Because if I go over there and I talk to the folks over here, and I talk to Ken, and Ken, he hasn't agreed with anything I've said since I've been here. I'm just picking on you, Ken. So there's a difference. So my point is always said, based upon the guy who has got 30, 40 years experience in this business, he said, in my professional judgment, I believe this is yellow. And here's the criteria for yellow. All we're saying is, as a board, do you believe that for the 90% percentile, he's got the credibility to say that's yellow? If the answer is yes, the answer is yes. So then, whenever the people come in and say, we want to build a miniature version of the USS Thomas Kennedy, we can do practice carrier landings up there. And we said, well, you know, we think that might be a little outside of scope. Well, but I mean, if they're a friend, we may have to consider that because it's got feasibility. My point is, and then, is, you know, that's in the best interest of national security, in the best interest of the PK to have that practice carrier battle group up there. Mm-hmm. Then the board says, we will make an exception. We will make a variance in the two and make that green on this case. Because they've been doing this, they've been on this journey for nearly 10 years. Well, then the board ought to make that. We ought to say that. And then whenever you have to stand up in front of the governor or whatever and say, why did the board make this silly decision? And the answer is, they've been paying their dues for 10 years and they've been trying to work within the guidelines that were established. So we made a judgment and we made a decision. Can't be wrong with that. So all we're really asking for is, as a benchmark, does the board theoretically agree to these numbers? Now, if there's variances in there, people are going to be back. If I don't come up with the answer they want, they're going to come say, the staff stiffed me. What do y'all want to do? If y'all don't come up with the answers they want, they're going to go to their elected official says, the board stiffed me. If then that doesn't happen, well, then I guess they go somewhere else. But the point is, there is a process. And I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm just trying to give the guys who have to be out there, and I think you've heard the other day, they've been very respectful. Not a person said a bad word about the staff and about how they was treating them, about how they're trying to be find this or arguing about that. But we've got to set the damn road. We've got to say, we agreed that 31 is perfect.
Okay, I'm not sure where we're leaving it. Well, let me leave it at this.
I think that there'll be a small time for our next meeting for Kent and Mike to make their statements. But I, for the board level and for its comfort today, so that we may move on, I think it's very clear for Mr. Ford that this is a benchmark. It's a base in which we go. Status, his hands are not tied. Certainly, every location will have to be judged on this certain merits and benefits, as Director Martin pointed out. If an area has reasonably can have a 30%, 40%, that's going to be our staff's judgment. And they can, and if they feel that it has to come to the board, it's going to come to the board. If not, it's not. We've got to give these folks something to start with. If you want some more clarification and comfort, then they can come back and visit with us on the 22nd.
But I'll give you the best answer we can on those two things with more data that we can come up with. But it's still, I think it's fundamental, just like I said. And again, I'm not trying to be, with all due respect, I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm just saying that that's what.
No, I mean, I think all of us want to get to a position where we are supportive of the staff, and where these issues are not continually redundant, where just because they don't get the answer they want, but like I said earlier, I think there's a clear line in the sand when we say all future developments have to meet these standards. And, oh, by the way, we appreciate the Gibson family for working with us, and this is the decision we're making specifically in regards to that, because it's a development that's been around for a while. So... other than that, I think we're on the same page.